This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 245, Eyes and Ears. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday afternoon with my friend and co-host Michael Martin to talk about ears and eyes and feelings and stuff on GamesAtWork.biz. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Ahoy there. I'm doing great. How are you?
Peachy keen, man. Peachy keen.
Hopefully we're not going to be talking about spiders and eyes. As long as that's the, you know, not on the docket, I'm in good shape.
Aye.
And yes, I know I'm a day late for the ahoy there, but, you know, it's like talk like a pirate week here in the Martin household. So
sure it is.
So if I were a space pirate, I might want to wear a space pirate suit that would augment my abilities to do all kinds of
piratical things
or radical things.
Yeah.
Or pie things. So how about a suit with haptic feedback and biometrics and temperature control and make me look like I just came out of the Dune movie? Wouldn't that be cool?
It does exactly look like the 1980, was it 3 or 4 Dune movie?
Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. With Kyle, what was his name, McLaughlin or something like that. Anyway. This is really, really cool. We've talked about for a long time on various different things. At least I know about haptic feedback. I remember when I first got my first haptic mouse, right? Mm-hmm. And it was
a Logitech, wasn't it?
It was a Logitech. It would buzz, and as you moved your cursor across the screen, the shapes of windows would cause things, and it was kind of cool. And there were certain games that used it for like a rumble stick, right, to give you a little bit of feedback of what's going on. And then we got cell phones, and the cell phones started adding haptic devices to let you know things. The watch, you know, you press down and you're not really pressing through the screen, but it gives you a little tap to make you feel like you're actually pressing a button, even though there's no button there. And so this is kind of the ultimate logical extension for AR and VR environments to give you the feedback to be more immersive. We talked about the 360 treadmills a while back, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I can imagine a 360 treadmill with the suit, with the goggle, with, I still think they got to have better hand things, right? I know we were looking at the HoloLens 2 video a while back where right. they actually have a camera on the HoloLens that looks out at your hands and catches your hands so you can actually use regular hand motions instead of holding little funky stick things like you see on the video here. But we're getting to the point where you'll be able to have fully immersive virtual and augmented environments for training, for education, for games, for whatever.
Yeah, exactly. My feeling about feeling things in an immersive experience can be super powerful. And we've seen that in some other games too. I mean, wasn't there like a vest or something like that that you would use for first person shooters?
And yeah, that would give you the little lines? Right.
Yeah, the little thump
feel the
when
shot.
You got hit.
Yeah,
you know, or stuff like that. So this is an upgraded new model. And some of the things when I was going through this site that I thought were pretty incredible were helping to build muscle memory, right?
Yep.
So when you do a particular task in a repeated fashion to develop the skill and ability to repeat it on command, you're developing muscle memory. So being able to do that for how you might become a better sprinter or how you might be a better a basketball shooter
or a welder,
right? So I mean, there's
think of all the industrial examples here, not just you know, super sports athletes, but people whose day-to-day job is to pick it up and put it over there.
Yeah. Well, you're holding it wrong. So you can get that, you know, immediate biofeedback of, yep. Oh, that's not exactly right. And your suit could kind of nudge you in the right direction. So I could see where something like this might not be just a training thing to help teach you how to do your welding better, but potentially could be something that allows for near real-time application of best practices when you're on the shop floor doing a manufacturing kind of a role, or where you are in an environment where you need to move quickly to handle something that they use public safety here, so for firefighters and for others, about how and when you might need to do something a little different than what is normally called for, and teaching you that, and or sensing the environment, right? So you have sensors on, and the sensors on the environment help augment your reaction and your reaction time so that you avoid the worst outcome and you get to the best outcome.
Yep.
Yeah. So this was pretty interesting, and we were both looking up a little bit. It's like, oh, Tesla suit, wonder what company that's with. And we did conclude in the end the company is called VR Electronics, so they're in England and Wales. not the car company, not Nikolai himself,
not the Tesla coil.
Like that. Exactly. So super interesting stuff.
I'm impressed by it. I think it looks really, really cool. They don't provide any pricing metric, so this is definitely still fully in the enterprise space. I can imagine this going into, you know, places like Dave & Buster's or other more commercial gaming spaces before you end up having one at the house.
Yeah, more than likely. Or mocap studios too, right? Where you're trying to, you know, do game development and say, oh, I'm trying to now, you know, model my favorite football player and how they're going to act and react in the game.
Yep.
Okay. So we've covered a wearable. Let's turn our vision to another wearable, except for the fact that this particular vision and this particular wearable is one that you listen to even more so than just watch.
A hearable,
yeah. So we've talked about hearables before and augmented audio before. And there's an interesting article here about Bose's entry into all of this, dealing with their glasses, which provide virtual reality or audio reality, if you will, in the form of a pair of glasses that pipe the sound into your ears in a dynamic way, so that when you're looking, quote unquote, at an ocean, and you turn your head, then the ocean remains spatially where it was, and you hear it now from the ear that's closest to where it was being projected to be.
Yeah, I thought we had looked at the Bose one a while back when it was in a gleam of their engineer's eyes.
Well, we did.
It sounds familiar.
They announced it, as I recall, back at South by Southwest, and I don't know precisely when that was. This particular article talks about a couple of games that are using what they're calling here the 3D spatial soundscape.
Right.
Say that 16 times fast with all the S's.
Not gonna do it.
But it was an intriguing thing about, you know, what these games are, how they operate. I was looking at one of the games too. So one of the games that was featured here is called That Dragon Cancer. And what they did is they incorporated this audio soundscape into what is an immersive and understandably a bit of a sad game, where a couple goes through the experience of losing a child to cancer, and it's an experiential sort of thing. It's not necessarily like, oh, that sounds like fun, let's go play that.
But I was about to say, woohoo, yay.
but it's helpful for, well, in the grand scheme of our show, you know, how do you use game and gaming technology to help people accomplish, you know, more tasks other than pure entertainment?
Right.
And what way to make something more real than changing what you see or changing what you hear? And this does precisely that. So that was what attracted me to this. And so it seems like it's getting more legs, if you will. Can something with audio stuff get legs? I guess it could.
They could sound like legs.
Than what we first experienced when we saw the first announcement of this. I'm still not in a spot where I'd say, you know, they look still cool. They're very Ray-Ban-esque, I would say, you know, just the way they are. They could be interesting, but I still haven't rushed out to say, yeah, I'm going to go get me a pair of these.
Yeah, so. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, but with all the other dedicated devices for listening to stuff, right? Mm-hmm. AirPods, Beats headsets, etc. Do I need one that's dedicated to this, or is there enough additive capability that the sound quality for basic hearing of a phone call is good enough in it to offset? I just, it seems like yet another piece of hardware to put on your face. As we dealt with Google Glass and some of the other ones, trying to figure out, you know, what's enough functionality where you want to dedicate a piece of hardware on your face? And can it be extended to do things like, you know, you and I both wear glasses. Mm-hmm. So can I put custom lenses in it? You know, Google did that with Glass for a while, but it was really hard to get it. Putting it as an attachment to my own glasses didn't work very well. There are other companies that are doing, you know, custom glasses for AR, not the audio side, right? Is there a good enough balance on the visual aspect and the auditory aspect? You know, what about things like HoloLens, which provides, you know, some audio as well as visual, as well as other capabilities? So I think everybody's kind of staking out a claim, and do the uniquenesses of each product on the plus side offset enough of the negative on the other sides compared to other products that focus on those other areas, right? I think it's kind of interesting.
I'm with you, and I think you're right. And what I find neat about this is that Bose is certainly playing to their strengths. I mean, Bose has done all this kind of acoustic and audio engineering and research over many, many, many years. So there could be a neat combo play here too, where a HoloLens kind of environmental structure coupled with the lenses from a glass perspective, coupled now with the audio, mm-hmm. can make the mixed reality experience that much more real.
Yeah, that's what you see. Like I said, you know, become the expert in your domain, make the other stuff good enough for people who just want to play in your domain, and then perhaps somebody will roll this all up into a new product that takes the best of HoloLens, the best of you know, Magic Leap, the best of the Bose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. No, love it. Love it. So if we turn now from with the body,
having
the
said
ears,
all that,
you know, to the next step, right, extending beyond the domain and connecting ears and brains. you found a pretty cool article here too from our friends over at Emotive.
Yeah, so we've been talking about Emotive for a long time. I worked with them early on in their existence. Haven't had a chance to do much with them in years, but I did like playing with their Emotive Insight headset, which was really about brain health. And it was a little awkward to, you know, walk around with it on. Battery life, pretty much, if you put it on full, drained pretty quickly, etc. So what they've done is they've announced a new product. Don't see any price or anything on it, but it's the Emanate.
That seems pretty common these days, isn't it? It's like, here's something new.
Here's something cool,
and
we'll we'll tell you about it later. So this is taking pretty much the same brainwave technology to figure out, concentration, focus, mood, etc., and embedding those sensors in a set of earbuds with the little hooks on them that are, Bluetooth wireless. So you're able to use them as earbuds, use them to make phone calls, but also do the brain health activities that the Insight headset gave you. So kind of cool. Again, back to the last tech of they're playing to their strength,
mm-hmm.
but it also has a couple other things. They're probably not the best Bluetooth headset, right? They're probably not the best for making phone calls, but I guarantee you for the shape and design, they're probably the best brainwave detectors in the price range that they'll come out at.
Right.
Imagine rolling this up with the tactic suit, the haptic suit, with the Bose audio capabilities and HoloLens glasses.
Oh, so now we're basically creating our own exosuit sort of
cyborg
thing. Cyborg eborg.
I think this is
the tactic suit too, because it is kind of tactical. You know, the way it kind of looks, that Tesla suit there.
It does kind of like. But no, this I want to know more about this. They literally just announced this yesterday from Emotive.
Wow.
It just came out. It sounds like a directional statement for a new product. And it looks like it will be cool. I'm again wondering on the pricing. I did like some of the stuff I was doing, playing around with the brain health activities. That was exciting. So it'll be interesting to see where this ends up.
I think so too. Now here's the fun thing. When I saw this in the show notes the ideas for today, it reminded me of something I had just looked at earlier this week, whereby researchers are looking at the interior of your ear canal as a mechanism of authentication, biometric authentication. And the whole idea around this is like, oh, it's impossible to spoof a user's ear canal.
If they're going to spoof yours, you're going to be knocked out for a while they do an ear mold.
yeah, probably so. So the funny thing is, when I was looking up to find this article, which I think is the one I found earlier this week,
looks
this
like
one's
it.
From Gizmodo, I saw that, there are versions of this. There's actually a Wired article from 2010 about using the ear is not about replacing existing biometrics such as fingerprints. Rather, it's about supplementing them. And this article also talks a little bit about, it would be a bad thing if you lost your earphones that you couldn't access your phone, which I'm sure there'd be secondary ways of like having a passcode or something.
Yeah, I think what's more interesting about this, let's say you're a law enforcement agency and you have a murder victim who's laying there with their cell phone next to them. All you have to do is plug in their earbuds and it unlocks.
That would work. Unless like with the fingerprints, blood flow and changes the dynamics rather quickly. I don't know.
To me, it looks like it's literally like a radar example, right? Mm-hmm. They're sending a sound pulse into the ear. It ricochets off the structure of the ear, hits the eardrum, and bounces back into the sensor.
And if it don't bounce back, you go hungry.
Bow, 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 bow.
That's too funny. I love that. All right. Well,
that's a wish sensor.
That's a wish sensor. Exactly. So let's move next to relaunch. Not the podcast, but the app.
Relaunch. So,
I don't remember where I saw this, but this was something cool. I bounced around and saw it. And so this company, R-E-L-O-N-C-H, Relaunch. AI, its tagline is a Hollywood lighting crew in your pocket. So it is an app that allows for the changing of the lighting structure of the pictures that you take based on a machine learning environment that looked at scads of pictures, we'll just say, to figure out optimal lighting mechanisms and then to apply such artificial virtual light into the picture that you have to change how it shows. And it kind of reminded me a bit, just a smidge, of the new iOS 13 enabled iPhone Pro low light condition way of taking pictures.
Well, it reminded me of, I'm trying to remember the name of the photo app, but Pixelmator had a release of a new photo app that they did this past year. It was featured at WWDC as one of the kind of really great examples of machine learning and user design, right? And the basic idea was, how do you use machine learning to improve picture quality, but also make it understandable what happened and adjustable for the average photo user who's not an expert in all the bit twiddling for adjusting a picture, right? Mm-hmm. And they did the same thing.
It's a lot of bit twiddling.
Yeah, because they used a couple of million pictures to identify what are the best adjustments, whether it's lighting or shadows, you know, adjusting shadows, adjusting the color temperature, et cetera, of the picture. And they used a million plus pictures from different professional photographers to teach the machine learning algorithm how to do it. And then they took each of the major components of photo adjusting and used those as separate toggles in the design of the app to say, hey, do you want to adjust overall? Hit this toggle, and then you can expand here and show all the manual adjustments that would have been done to give you this picture by a professional photographer. Or you just want to adjust color temperature. So you can hit that machine learning one, and it'll adjust the color temperature to be pleasing and then show you how it did it and what it did, etc. So to me, it's the same basic concept. What's interesting is the second half of the changing the mood of the video to, you know, be the superhero shot, right? Or the, you know, film noir environment, right? And how it actually, at least in their video examples, adds different lighting sources, right? So it's not just changing the light of where the person is and leaving the background dimmed, right? Which would be kind of like a focus light, but actually giving you the ability to put a spotlight into the light and how that would adjust the colors and the lighting of the picture overall.
And that is super evident too in the bottom of that homepage, where you can kind of scroll over some of the shots that they've got there of, like, you know, hero lighting and stage lighting and stuff like that. What I'm trying to find, and I use the wrong terminology to find it. Oh, it's called auto enhance. That's what it is. Yeah. Remember Google's, you know, I was looking up Awesomizer, and it's like, no, they didn't call it Awesomizer. The make better button. I'm not one who does a lot of bit fiddling when it comes to pictures. I know you do that on occasion, you know, when it matters, and it's a particular shot that you want to take, you know, extra care of and just make it as awesome as possible. But I think for just the wide variety, large scale, you want a good picture, you know, and you don't necessarily want to filter and fiddle with filters and dials and improvements. You just want the shot you took to look good. And the fact that something like this exists already now and the machine learning behind it is only going to get better. It's kind of, take a shot, whatever the shot is, and you'll have a fantastic picture behind it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the really, really incredible things that Google has done on the Google Pixel phones, right? They have that awesomizer, for lack of a better term, capability in their camera. And then Samsung's doing some great things with machine learning and their picture processing on their cell phones.
Yeah.
I think iOS 13 and the iPhone 11 Max Pro has allowed Apple to catch up and possibly surpass in a lot of areas. But there's a new Pixel coming out any day now. Samsung just released a new phone. Be interesting to see how this gets better. The thing from a professional photographer perspective, the thing you want is the exact picture you took. And then you bit twiddle to give it emotion or feelings or some other aspect to the picture, right? Whether that's HDR or, you know, putting shadows where shadows weren't there or highlighting certain things. At least that's my opinion.
No, I would agree with that. That's you want the picture that you took, and you want the best camera to take the best picture that you took.
Well, what if you take too many pictures?
Then you're happy you did them digitally. But I would think, what if you really wanted to keep one? You know, give it to a friend, have a copy of it on paper, put it up on your bulletin board or something like that. That you might want to do that, right?
Yeah. And if you did, you know, Polaroid, the company that did the first, you know,
Instamatic
snapshots that you could give to friends, has come out with a new device that allows you to put your cell phone on it and it'll print out a Polaroid.
Yeah, I mean it's a picture of a picture, isn't it?
Pretty much. And what I loved about it is their video that they talk about is if you take too many pictures, you want to keep that physical one. And I'm like, well, if you take too many pictures, you know, storage is cheap. Just don't put them all on your phone.
Well, I don't know. I leave them on my phone so I can find them. I don't see that as necessarily a problem. In fact, I find it as a benefit because many times I'm like, I need a picture of a da da da. And now that I've got years of pictures on my phone, I can find it.
Yeah, but you have a phone with lots of storage.
Well, yeah.
If you had an entry-level Android phone with 16 gigabytes of storage on it, you would not have all your pictures with you at all time.
Well, I would argue with that and say if I had a cloud, oh, say like a Google Cloud, I would, because I could just go, hey, Google Cloud, find me a picture of my cat or whatever.
Yeah.
And well, I would.
I'm just saying.
I know.
I think they've got a good approach with that marketing thing, because I do know people who run out of storage on their devices all the time. And who don't have high-speed, always-on access to the internet. And so I think there is a market for this product. Now, those same people can't afford to throw down $130 for a little photo thing that basically is a printer that then will
just
probably that probably then will charge you extra for the little print-out part, right? You know, because you'll have cartridges for that.
Yep.
But cute idea.
Well, it is a cute idea.
You found an article about the new internet.
I did, but I don't know very much about it. So what caught my eye on this one was that it was pointing at one of the local universities around here. And apparently the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill is leading a $20 million project to look at the next internet, and they're calling it Fabric. And the way that I understand it to be here is that there will be a enormous core across the United States, you know, bouncing from Washington, D.C. to San Diego in kind of a zigzaggy way with Chicago and Houston in between. And that is intended to be a terabit super core, of which there will be other aspects that are connected to it too. So with the advent of 5G, with all the other things that are happening right now, certainly having super fast sharing of data and massive quantities of data are going to remain crucial to our ability to succeed in this space. I'm curious to know what this means, because I don't really know yet. And the article kind of says a little bit about it so far. But it's neat to know that one of our local universities here in North Carolina is having a leadership aspect of helping determine what the next generation of internet's going to be. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I looked at it. It looked like a really good press release article. That's fine. I know Georgia Tech used to be a primary hub of the prior internet or the current internet. There's NC State was a hub also for some of it. So there's lots of different ways that this new technology needs to be tested out and spread out over different universities. The thing that I find really interesting about the picture is that there's a huge gap of any coverage in the whole northern central part of the country.
Yeah, it kind of is. That's kind of is, isn't it? It's kind of a bit of a gap.
Bit of a gap. There should be at least one blue dot, like up in North Dakota, which would then allow you to put a bunch of other links in there and cover the rest of the country.
Yep. Or how about San Francisco kind of being missing here a little bit too?
Well, isn't that the LBNL?
Yeah, but that's where's the connection to it, right?
It's 5G.
Oh yeah.
So
sneaker net.
I know we're just about out of time. Have you played any new games?
I think the short answer is no. but I do have iOS 13 installed, so I feel good about that.
So Wednesday.
How about you?
Wednesday, before they officially released 13, my beta it was Tuesday, on my iPad popped up and said, hey, you want to try out Arcade?
Oh, no.
So I turned it on. I'm going to shut it. I'm not paying for it. I am shutting it off in 3 weeks. I pulled down 75 new games.
Holy schmoly. Are you kidding me?
And I've dipped into the first 30 for like a minute to 3 minutes each over the course of the week.
And
there are some good games in there. There's nothing that's bad. Mm-hmm. But there's some styles of games that I don't like. There's some that I just suck at. But overall, lots of good, high-quality games. Sound is important in all of them. This will be interesting to see how this rolls out over the next year or two, to see if Apple keeps the investment up to add in new, really top-notch games.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. And when you are done with your free trial period, will then those games disappear? Is that how that would work?
Yeah, as soon as I turn it off, it will invalidate the downloads or
something
or whatever.
Like that.
Yeah.
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 Well, very cool. I'm glad you got a shot at that. Well, we are absolutely at time now. So fun discussions on a variety of fronts. Glad we're back in the saddle here and looking forward to sharing more links, stories, ideas, haptic and non, with all of our gamesatwork.biz family. So we'll catch you next time.
Yeah. And if you're in Durham, North Carolina tomorrow, before this show comes out, go to Centerfest and you can hear me sing at noon.
Travel back in time.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.